Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are rock and rolling on a Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're coming to you from coast to coast as always. Michael at his office out there in Ocean City. I am live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. We got a lot to get to over the course of the next hour as we welcome you into VSiN and DraftKings Network. We'll hit on primarily NFL, but we do have a little bit of college football. VSiN.com writer Aaron Moore is going to join us to dive into this weekend slate and some of the big topics their awards in the NFL and college football, Michael. But where we have to start, of course, is Monday Night Football last night. The Bills get upset as a touchdown and a half favorite against the Denver Broncos, who, by the way, like, we talked a lot in hour one about Buffalo, and we will again here, but got to give Broncos some credit here. A third straight win, and now two in a row where they were an underdog of a touchdown or more, Michael, that they went outright.
And beat two of the so-called elite teams. Yeah. Now, I don't think Buffalo's an elite team. I've been saying this for 6 weeks now, that Buffalo's a below-average team with a great quarterback. But give Denver credit, okay? Give Sean credit for being able to get the team back to focus, giving up 700 yards, 70 points in week three. They fight back the next week and beat the Bears in a kind of a crazy, crazy game. They gave up 400 yards in that game too, 300 passing to Justin Fields, but he turned it over. And now they've won three in a row. I mean, the game that they probably are kicking themselves for not winning is the Jets game. It's 24-21 in that game. They're driving to tie it up, and Russell fumbles, and next thing you know, it's over. But I think here's what's been going on for the Broncos and why Sean is a good coach. He's, after 4 weeks, he said, okay, here's who I know I am. This is what I am as a team. And Wilson can do some things, but he also doesn't do a lot of things, right? He makes a lot of mistakes, and he cost us, so I'm just going to hone it in. Think about this now, Stormy. They beat Chicago, they throw for 214. They beat Kansas City, they throw for 82, rush for 115. They beat Green Bay, they throw for 194, they rush for 145. They beat Kansas City, they throw for 87. 87 they throw for. Last night they beat the Buffalo Bills. They threw for 178. Like, they're not even trying to throw it. Like, they're just saying, look, we're 30th in passing attempts. We don't care. You can make fun of us all you want. We'll be conservative. All you analytical people can give me crap for calling runs on first down. Go ahead and do it. I'm trying to win the game. I'm trying to keep my quarterback from beating me, and I've done a good job with that, and I've won three in a row, and I've got the Vikings, and I've got Cleveland, and then I got Houston, the Chargers, and the Lions on the road, all tough, but I'll be in those games.
Well, and I think that's what it's about, right? Whatever it takes to win. And even with all of that that you're talking about with the passing numbers, Russell Wilson still has more passing touchdowns at this point in the year this season than he did all of last year. So, like, even with that thought process, he is still able to have more success, Michael.
Right. And so, look, we talked about that earlier in the show in the last hour, right? We said, how do you define how a quarterback, when the great Robert Saleh said that his quarterback's playing well, even though he's 32nd on third down and 32nd in the red zone, they've done a nice job of Madison Russell Wilson. He's 14th in the league in third down conversions, 13th in the red zone. And yesterday, for whatever reason, Stormy, for whatever reason, the Sean McDermott defense really enjoyed running past the quarterback. They really enjoyed opening up the Red Sea so that Russell could step up and run that little flick pass to Williams or Perrine or whomever else was there and gain yards. Like, at some point, when were they going to fix the rush? When were they going to say, hey, let's keep them in the pocket? They ran zero blitz for the sack. Russell takes a bad sack. He couldn't take it, but he had no choice. And then the next play, they come back and run zero blitz again, and he gives up a pass interference call. Look, I mean, you got to know your personnel. Like, you can't cover anybody one-on-one. Teron Johnson cannot cover Jerry Jeudy. I promise you, 10 out of 10 times, it's going to be completed.
So let's go through that final drive, because late in the game, the Broncos are driving down 22-21. Russell Wilson facing that third and 10, exactly what you just said, the zero blitz. He throws it downfield to Jerry Jeudy, ends up getting the defensive pass interference, moves them all the way down to the 28-yard line. Broncos get three straight knees to wind down the clock. After the third knee, it's the fire drill situation. They have had kicking problems all game. Missed two extra points because of a bad snap and a miss, the Broncos did. You think if you are a Bills backer or fan, we got a chance in this situation. If the kick happens, you miss, Bills win, right? Wrong. Because there were 12 men on the field in an unacceptable situation. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, Michael. The defense that Sean McDermott had out there was the dime package for the kneel downs. Instead of just already, you know what you're going to get and being prepared for the situation. They shouldn't have been subbing in that instance, but they are and have 12 men on the field.
Which makes it even worse. Which makes this even worse. Which makes us really coaching malpractice 101. And, of course, I don't think anybody's talking about it today because God forbid if you talk about it. But on third down, on second and 12, Sean called his last timeout with 25 seconds left to go. He used his last timeout, and that was after Russell kneeled for minus 1 yard. The play before, he used his second timeout when Russell kneeled. So he's watched two kneel downs. He's watched Russell kneel down. What in God's earth made him think they were going to not kneel it down on the third down play? Like, what on, like, why not just put your field goal rush team on the field after the timeout? Why? Like, why is no one saying that? Like, this is just coaching malpractice. Like, you just cost the game. Now, maybe he would have made the kick. I don't know. But you would have not had 12 men on the field. You would not have. You could have counted them all up. And if you had 12 on the field, it would have been a penalty. And so you then moved the ball 5 yards. Like to me, you used your last timeout. Yeah. What are we doing? But look, I hate to bring it up to Bills fans, but can we go back to the 13 seconds? Like, can we go back to that?
It always comes back to that,
doesn't it? You're talking about a situation that gets you to the Super Bowl. 13 seconds left to go. They put the returner, Pringle, back there. They don't put Tyreek Hill back there. I would have been more than happy to kick it to Pringle. But just say you kicked it out of the end zone like they do and you don't use any time. He rushed four guys. Why would you even need to rush four? If you rush two against Mahomes, he's got to hold the ball. Where are you going to throw the ball to? Where are you throwing the ball to? If he wants to take off and run, the game's over. The game is over if he takes off and runs. There's no way they're going to get their field goal team out. They're going to spot the ball. Like, this is gross mismanagement of critical games, and this one too. Like, when you have that 13-second brain fart, you're going to bring up this one too. It just comes back.
Yeah, they're forever going to be haunted by that, and now it's compounding. And so, Michael, now this is 2 years in a row where McDermott has essentially fired his coordinators. We talked about it earlier. Leslie Frazier, he was the play caller on defense. McDermott wanted to take that over. So Leslie Frazier basically says, okay, well, I'm not going to do this anymore. And so he's on his merry way. Now Ken Dorsey this morning, offensive coordinator for the Bills, he is let go. They're 5-5 right now, and it's not looking particularly optimistic the rest of the way. Is this the end of the road for Sean McDermott with Buffalo this season?
Well, I mean, look, he's had a lot of wins, and as he said in his press conference after the game, they do some really good things, but he has a great quarterback that covers up a lot of these things. But I think a lot of what the Pakula family has to ask themselves is the same thing that Robert Kraft has to ask himself, is if we get rid of him, who can we get that's better? Who could we figure out that's better? And could we do something to make him better? Like, he took over that play calling for a reason. You know, Leslie Frazier, again, he left because he was promised the play calling duties. And since he took it away, now he's calling the defense. I think, to me, and I wrote about it, Stormy, this is a structural problem in Buffalo. It really comes down to how you build the team. And I brought up Peyton Manning in my column because for all the greatness of Peyton Manning, and I think I've never seen anybody like him in my life. I mean, it's unbelievable. And he got a lot of people in the Hall of Fame, right? Everybody says, you know, Belichick can't win without Brady. Okay. Peyton Manning, as great as he was, went to one Super Bowl. They were 9-10 on the road as the Colts with him at quarterback. 9-10. Seven of those nine losses occurred on the road. And you say, why? Because they were undersized on defense. They wanted to be fast and athletic. And when they went outside in the cold and the weather, they weren't as fast, nor were they athletic. And it cost them. And so I know that from experience. And that's what Buffalo's trying to do. I mean, Miami ran the ball down. I mean, the guy in Miami back then, McDaniels, he didn't even want to call runs and he was running it down their throat. I mean, they scored 31 points on Buffalo last year in a playoff game with a third-string quarterback, Skylar Thompson. Their problems are how they built this defense.
They have a lot of issues, and it doesn't help with not only how they built the defense, but now you have the issues with all of the injuries that they have as well. And because you mentioned Peyton Manning, I don't watch the Manning cast, but I like watching the clips of it afterwards. And him yelling at the TV screen last night saying "we" about the Broncos the whole time was cracking me up, because Eli's like, you know, it's funny because when they were losing all those games early in the season, it was they and you, and now it's we again. Very, very interesting. And also, maybe this is something we can get into to next segment or later on in the show even, but the problems with Buffalo off the field also, because we have Trayvon Diggs, Stephon's brother, chiming in on Twitter now saying, man, 14 got to get up out of here, saying, let's not forget, he, talking about Josh Allen, didn't start going off until bro got here. Like, there's a lot off the field that is probably problematic within that Bills locker room.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing is you and I talk about it, but not many people in the national media talk about how Josh Allen has led the league in interceptions and fumbles since 18.
Yep.
I mean, he's been a turnover machine, and then, you know, I think he's a great player. I do. But he makes way too many. He's too much of a gunslinger.
Yeah, I'm sure there are 25, 26 teams in the NFL that would love to have him as their quarterback, but he makes the back-breaking mistakes as well, which makes it really, really tough to overcome. Okay, we're going to talk some awards markets when we come back here, because also, leave it to me, yesterday after I go off on the Damar Hamlin of it all, that he logs a stat, Michael, awards. Comeback Player of the Year. We'll be there when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many games on the board, there's no better time to put the VSiN experts to work for you. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game. Plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up today. Get your first 30 days for only $19. You'll see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can sign up now. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we're going to dive into some of the NFL awards markets here as we are passing over the midway point of the year, Michael. But I was saying before the break, of course, on a day yesterday when we are here on the show and I am pumping up Josh Dobbs for comeback player of the year because Damar Hamlin hasn't sniffed the field other than special teams in one game. He's not playing defensive snaps. He gets his first tackle, logs an official stat, and the odds for comeback player of the year go from minus 110 to $2, and you just anticipate it going up if he continues to play. Classic.
Yeah, and Hyde's been hurt, so they got to play him. I wasn't sure. I kind of was getting the sense they weren't going to play him. It didn't seem like it, but clearly, if he's going to get on the field and participate, he's going to be hard to beat. Although, I still would take – I mean, look, just say, if Josh Dobbs continues this trend. Now, one thing we do know about Minnesota, right? So Nick Mullins can start practicing today. Jared Hall is out of concussion protocol. So, you know, would they go back to those guys? I don't know. But if he's having a bad quarter or something like that, I could see Stefanski making a decision.
So with Dobbs, I would find that hard to believe that O'Connell would move off of him, right? Because, like, he's been so good to this point. If he has one bad quarter, and we saw, like, the sample size with Arizona, they weren't losing because Josh Dobbs was playing poorly. They were losing games because, like, their team is not talented, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what it felt like to me.
Right. I agree. But there are times in games where if he's not playing good – and you've got guys on the bench that you think could, you might make that move. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
I agree with you completely. Like, they seem to be really linked. And look, one thing I know, Kevin O'Connell has done a great job. He's a great play caller. He calls a game to kind of help the quarterback. He makes the game very, very friendly for the quarterback, much like Bobby Slovic does down in Houston. I mean, as much as I love – what C.J. Stroud's been able to accomplish. He's throwing the guys that are wide open. And those are scheme throws. Now, he makes some tight windows throws, too, don't get me wrong. But the scheme really helps, and I think O'Connell does the same thing.
Yeah, and some people also taking a shot on Aaron Rodgers as his number goes down and down. He told Melissa Stark that he's trying to be back by December. He's only 20-1 right now in this market.
Come on. How is that not a St. Jude's pick? Stormy, come on.
I'm with you.
Where are the Jets going to be by the time that he comes back? I mean, it's a miracle. If he does even get on the field, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. We should cue up the warden in Shawshank. Remember when he screams, it's a miracle. We should cue that up. But, I mean, come on. This Jet notion that they're going to just turn it around. Well, remember, Zach's playing well.
He's actually playing really well. Speaking of Shawshank, I got to tunnel my way out of any more of this Aaron Rodgers narrative because I am over talking about it. But we have to because it's the news and it's the NFL. It is what it is. But let's go to MVP, which is an award that Aaron has won a number of times, but not in the market for this season. Right now, Jalen Hurts is our favorite, plus 280. Patrick Mahomes right there at 3-1. Lamar Jackson plus 425. Tua Tagovailoa plus 550. And then the numbers get longer and longer with Joe Burrow and beyond. CJ Stroud is the name that is getting a ton of attention right now. He was 130-1, then 90-1 prior to this week, 25-1 right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, MVP, I think it's a little rich. The only rookie that's ever won the MVP has been Jim Brown back in 58, I think, when it was. Look, I think Stroud's played really well. I mean, he's played really well. But, you know, we are such a – the way we cover the NFL is somewhat based on 1 week. You know, do you remember when he went to Carolina and threw for 119 yards?
It was the pride of my husband's whole season that Carolina and Bryce Young beat C.J. Stroud. That was, I mean, my household was just shining so bright that day. The only day, really, this season that's occurred.
I mean, look, he's done a great job, and I think he's Offensive Rookie of the Year. But the MVP of the league, not so fast for me. Not so fast. I mean, now that's the agenda of the worldwide leader. They're going to push that narrative as much as they can because that's now, you know, one thing about the worldwide leader, you know what they want to put. I mean, that when they get on a subject, they don't let it go, right? I mean, they're like, as Parcells used to say all the time, you know, you're like that dog with that bone. You got two paws wrapped around it. You won't let it go. That's the kind of the way they are. You ain't going to let this one go, but I don't know how it happens. Like, I mean, look, they played Jacksonville. He played really well against Jacksonville. They got the Jets. Oh, my God, they're going to play the Jets defense. I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, I mean, they don't have a hard schedule. They got Tennessee twice. They got the Colts. He should put up good numbers, but I think that they're a kind of a team that even in the last 2 weeks against Tampa and Cincy, they could have easily lost those games.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael, and to what you were saying earlier about national networks and the things that they're saying about CJ Stroud, like, no shade to non-betting people, but when non-betting people are using betting words and they don't understand them, that's when, like, there's an issue. And with CJ Stroud specifically, you have a lot of these people outwardly saying, CJ Stroud is the favorite for MVP. No, he's not. Not even close, actually. But I can get where you're going with that. You think that he could potentially down the line be an MVP.
Why would you let facts get in the way of their?
Exactly.
Why would you let facts get in the way of your narrative? Their narrative. They could care less about facts.
He is, however, the favorite.
They could care less about
Michael. He is, however, the favorite for Offensive Player of the Year. And significantly, it is minus 1600 right now. It was minus 500 coming into the week. But I mean, it feels like a no-brainer, especially given the success that the Houston Texans have had this. At this point in the season, as long as he stays healthy the rest of the way, I don't know how anybody could knock him off. But is there any other name that you look at and you see the number and you think, hey, you never want to bet on or off an injury, obviously. But who else, who would you say is the next best rookie this year and based on what you could see the rest of the season?
Yeah, the rookie one, I don't know if there's anybody that could compete with him in the rookie class, really. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I agree.
That.
It's tough.
You know, although I would say, you know, the running back Achan.
Yeah.
I think Achan. I mean, he's been incredible, and he's back this week. And the way he runs, I mean, he should be ahead of Robinson, you know, because he's going to be in the spotlight. He would be somebody I don't think is a St. Jude's play there.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I think, like you said off the top, it's hard to imagine anybody else could win this award. And like, even if he were to be injured, I feel like he's done so much in setting rookie records and done the things that he was, it'd be hard to knock him off. But we'll keep an eye on it. Defensive Player of the Year, we have Myles Garrett. Now, the standalone favorite in this market, Michael. He was tied with Micah Parsons for a time, but now plus 140, he stands alone. Parsons there at 2-1 behind him. TJ Watt at 2-1 as well. And Nick Bosa and beyond is where you see the numbers drop off of a cliff.
Well, look, if the Raiders keep winning, Max Crosby ought to get some consideration because they're going to need him to be. Danielle Hunter should be better than 55-1 because he's been outstanding for what they do. You know, and the way that Brian calls defenses, he really highlights Hunter's ability because what Brian Flores does down there is he kind of gives you the same look, but then he has three or four different things he does off the look, which makes it hard for the offense to pick up. At 55-1, that's a big number. Everybody else, other than Max and Hunter, I don't know if I would. I can't imagine Hunter could win it. I think it would be a St. Jude's play, but it certainly would be interesting. And I don't see the Raiders being a playoff team, but the energy and the enthusiasm they have. I mean, look, they won that game the other night against the Jets, and I didn't think that Crosby really had the impact on the game that I thought he was going to have. I mean, he's relentless. He plays play after play after play. He gives incredible effort. But it was really, I thought he would have more of an impact in terms of bothering Zach Wilson.
Really special player. The extra max in his name.
And by the way, for the record, Stormy, Zach Wilson's playing really good. I don't want you to forget that.
Yeah, actually, playing really good. Is he? Interesting, because my eyes seem to tell me different. We must be watching a different football game here. But I was going to say, with Max Crosby, that extra X in Max is for X Factor, right? Pretty good. Okay, yep. Last one. We got 60 seconds. Who is your coach of the year right now? Is it still D'Amico Ryans for you?
It is D'Amico. I think Kevin O'Connell's done a great job. Look, you can't ignore Dan Campbell's what he's done, and you can't let him pay a price because he's got a good team. You know, he's done a good job of managing the team too, right? And so I think, to me, you've got to take that into consideration. But D'Amico has lifted that team to where now all of a sudden we're looking at their schedule saying, wait a minute, they could put 10 wins up there.
Yeah.
I mean, they have an easier path to 10 wins than Buffalo does to 10.
Yeah, I think we need to get Mike McDaniel out of the top three. That must just be a liability thing. But, I mean, Campbell, Ryans, O'Connell with what the Vikings are doing. Tomlin was 20-1 last week. He was 12-1 yesterday. He's 10-1 now. There are a lot of potential candidates. I just don't know if the Steelers can keep winning games the way that they have in order for him to get over the hump in that market. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. We'll be right back. We're going to turn our attention to college football on the Lombardi Line next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In the NBA, the game can change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers can score $150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code VEGAS, that's V-E-G-A-S. The crown is yours. We're going to turn our attention to a little bit of college football here as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. Our good friend Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, sports media professor, joining us now. And Aaron, I need some help. I am hoping you are the man for the job. Is there any way that you can help me with my next VSiN contract? It's coming up next year. I would really like to get the Jimbo Fisher package if possible. So what can you do for me?
So here's the way to be a Jimbo Fisher contract. Tell them if you leave, they're going to have to pay you a ton of money and, in essence, create your own value. And I think that's interesting as we look at the higher education industry as a whole. You have some schools that are really in financial problems, Division I schools throughout the whole line. And then you see what Texas A&M is paying someone not to coach. And I think it's so interesting to see the higher education industry, the sports industry within higher education, where you have a school that has donors willing to pay $70 million for a guy to pack his bag. What are they going to have to pay for someone to actually win games? So, Stormy, when you negotiate, you have to make sure everybody at Visa knows you are the best and they can't live without you. And if they're going to live without you, they're going to have to pay a ton of money for you to go elsewhere. And then that's the Jimbo Fisher package.
Michael, I hope John Goulet and Bill Ady are listening. This is important stuff.
Yeah, well, actually, the advice I would give you, Stormy, is hire Jimmy Sexton. Because Jimmy right. Sexton's got, you know, that's who does all these deals. And the fact of the way he structured the payout, I mean, Aaron's absolutely right. I mean, the other day, the University of Arizona had miscalculated their finances, and they have a $240 million deficit that they have to come up with, which means they're going to have to get rid of a lot of programs. Right now, they have the most programs of any team in the Big 12. They're going to have to reduce at least 8 to 10 of those programs because of this deficit that they didn't see coming. So, you know, it's really remarkable how Jimbo could leverage them into making this stupid deal. And the person who did the deal is still there. That's the amazing thing. I mean, the AD that hired Jimbo is still there. Actually, Jimbo brought him in and they redid the contract. He's represented by Sexton. So it's just, you got to get to Jimmy. I'll give you his number in a break and you two can work it out. Aaron, I want to ask you a question. Were you absolutely shocked that Michigan didn't even give J.J. McCarthy a chance to throw the ball in the second half to at least say, you know, I might be a Heisman candidate?
That is interesting, Michael. I was thinking about that obviously Michigan's job is, whoever is coaching Michigan at the time, is to win games, is to beat Penn State. That's the number one priority. But at the same time, when you have these programs that are looking to be the top five programs, they're looking to play for college football playoff titles. They also use these games for recruiting. And what can help you recruit more than creating a platform to have a Heisman Trophy winner? So I was surprised, just for the reason that Michigan has done well. J.J. McCarthy's profile has increased dramatically. He is one of the big names. He's on the Heisman board. And they didn't let him throw the ball. So, yes, it kind of looked like they were punching Penn State in the face. But at the same time, it's almost like they devalued their quarterback. And, yeah, I was a little surprised by that.
32 straight runs. And meanwhile, so as his Heisman odds get longer, Jaden Daniels' odds get shorter. And obviously, he was incredible this past week. We still have Bo Nix as the favorite to win the Heisman this year. Michael Penix Jr. not far behind Jaden Daniels either on the odds board. But now you have Washington as an underdog to Oregon State this week with that line flip. Jaden Daniels isn't going to have the opportunity to play in a conference championship game. You think Bo Nix or Penix are? Like, there's a lot of different factors here. What's your approach as you look at the Heisman Trophy odds board right now? And who, if you had to make a decision based on what you think is going to play out the next couple of weeks, is going to be the winner?
And Stormy, that's the key. If you're going to make a bet at this point, you're looking not at this week, you're looking at the next 3 weeks. Jaden Daniels, just by looking at him, what a great game he had last week, almost doing the 400, 200. That was amazing. He does look like a Heisman-type quarterback. The problem is, and that's why it's going to be very difficult to bet on him, even though you're getting plus 320, as you see, is you're going to have to wrestle the narrative his way. So not only is Jaden Daniels going to need to finish up the season for LSU strong and maybe get this 400, 200 plateau, but the voters are going to have to then say, let's look at him and not these guys who are playing for teams that might go to the playoffs. And that's the difficulty, I think. And as much as you want to look at Daniels and say that's a Heisman Trophy winner, you're betting on voters picking up a different narrative. And with Bo Nix as the favorite and Michael Penix right there, the bet there is based on who's going to win if there is that Oregon Pac-12 championship. So those guys can play themselves into a Heisman. Same thing with Marvin Harrison Jr. If he has a big game against Michigan and his numbers aren't the same as Devontae Smith, but he has done very well, he has a chance to play himself into a Heisman. To me, that is a better opportunity to bet on than someone like Daniels. He's going to have to play well. And in essence, the voters are going to have to look past Nix and Penix and Harrison, who are playing, in this case, for a national championship.
Okay, so Michael Penix is now, shockingly, Oregon State is the favorite, you know, partly because of the way they play defense lately. So handicap this game. I mean, are they luring us into a trap? I've seen Oregon State. They're good. They're physical on defense. They can run the football. But don't you feel like, I mean, Arizona moved the football on them and scored. I'm not sure that that Washington should be a dog here.
So I look at it as a situational handicapping here, Michael, with the Washington-Oregon State game. I took this one right when it came out. I got Oregon State plus one. The line is now Oregon State minus 2.5. If that gets to 3, I'm going to look to play both sides of that. That would be a situation that I'm looking for. But the situation I see is going against Washington here. And you look at what Washington has done. They've had an undefeated season. They've played very well. Penix is clearly a Heisman candidate. But look at what they have done over the last few weeks at Arizona. 31-24, Oregon 36-33, Arizona State 15-7, at Stanford 42-33, USC at USC 52-24, and then last week 35-28. Washington has been playing almost above their weight, so to speak. The games are close. These are tight. And if you look at what Oregon State had last week, they had a pretty easy game. They destroyed Stanford 62-17. So I think the situation here is looking good for Oregon State. All these close up and down games that Washington has been playing in the Pac-12, I think eventually comes up and catches up with them this week.
You also have a bet in what's a pretty big game in the American Conference this weekend. Memphis hosting SMU. They're getting 8 points, total 66.5. But the winner of this game puts themselves in great position to play in the American Conference Championship here in a couple of weeks. What are you looking at there?
So it is interesting, Stormy, that you have SMU versus Memphis, two teams in the AAC. They're both 8-2. In that conference, you're going to be overshined by Tulane. Tulane's had such a good season. So you have two 8-2 teams here. What I like in this situation is Memphis getting 8 points at home. They're two relatively even teams. What I find somewhat concerning is Memphis is 2-7-1 against the spread. So that's concerning. But SMU on the road has basically only beaten mediocre teams, that they have losses against TCU, Oklahoma. So you have SMU that has 8 wins, but in that AAC that's very top heavy, I don't see them beating teams that they should, or they're beating teams they should beat. So 8 points, I think, is a lot. Memphis does well at home. It's a big game. And it is interesting. We're kind of overlooking the AAC. They have Tulane, and SMU and Memphis are pretty decent teams.
Anything else? We got 60 seconds. Anything else you want to give out real quickly?
Yeah, I would look at one of the other games, Stormy. You have Kansas State and Kansas, and it's interesting. Both of those teams are 7-3, and in a way that's almost disappointing, that Kansas State should have had that Texas win 2 weeks ago. In Kansas, if they had Jalen Daniels, I think they'd be a much different team. So you don't know what Kansas is getting in terms of a quarterback. They might be on their third quarterback this week, and what Kansas did last week in Texas Tech played a tight game. So I look at this game, I like the under 56.5 points, that you're going to have a team in Kansas that isn't going to open it up. I think their only chance to win is to keep it close.
Love it. You're the man, Aaron. Thanks for doing this as always.
Great work.
Thank you very much. Aaron. Good luck to you.
Sneaky fun piece of information for anybody out there who cares. SMU, one of just three teams that ranks top 10 in college football in overall offense and defense, along with Michigan and Georgia. So not the team that you would expect, the SMU Mustangs. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting Splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. You can check out the Betting Splits for every game at VSiN.com. And we'll get into a couple of the more lopsided games already early for the NFL Week 11 slate in a moment. But it is time, Michael, for our pro tip of the hour, which we do every single day here on the Lombardi Line. If you want to search for our tips specifically on VSiN.com, it is searchable by show name, so just type it right in there. But with this week having so many divisional rematches from earlier games this season, you came up with an interesting note in the AFC North, Michael. What do you got for the people?
Well, what happens is in the AFC North, it's always so competitive. I mean, look, Pittsburgh has been ahead of Cleveland going back to 1989. The Browns haven't finished ahead of the Steelers since that time. So, but the games are typically close. And when you look at it, in these games just north, forget the spread. If you take the dog, you're 69-43-3 in these games. So, you know, forget the handicap. Just blindly say, okay, I'm going to take Pittsburgh in the four, I'll take Cincinnati in the 3.5. You probably will end up well. Like for me, I want to take Cleveland and lay the four because I watch Pittsburgh and I'm saying, wait a minute, they're not very good. They can't. But hold on. Hold on. Mike Tomlin, this nugget, it makes it very hard.
Yeah, it's interesting. And especially because earlier, too, when we were talking about the Thursday night game with the Ravens-Bengals, you said that you did think it was going to be similar to what we saw earlier this season, which was the Ravens winning, but also similar in that it came down to just a field goal. And with the 3.5-point spread, maybe that does lend to the dog that you're getting that extra hook on Cincinnati in that spot, even though you like the Ravens to win, these games are just so close.
Yeah, you know, and so everybody, we focus so much on the injury report, right? Oh, my God, the injury report's coming out. What are we going to do? You know, one of the reasons why a lot of people, me included, didn't recommend the Browns last week in that game because we felt like, okay, you know, when you watch the game, you know, their offensive line, they had so many guys hurt. I mean, you know, they started Christian at left tackle. They started Hudson at right tackle. Oh, they're going to get killed. The Ravens are so good. And yet they didn't. They were able to run the ball effectively. They managed the clock really well. They slowed the game down with 36 rushing attempts, averaged almost 5 yards a carry. Sometimes I think we make way too much of the injury report. If the coach models the game plan to kind of force it to not have to be that big of a deal. Now, if they would have gone in the game at a straight drop back element, probably would have gotten sacked.
Yeah, VSiN Pro Tips, free daily tips available on VSiN.com. And Michael, I'm just still bent out of shape about the Ravens, okay? I had so much belief and conviction that even if they didn't cover that spread, they were certainly going to win the game. They are up 14 points in the fourth quarter. They are poised to win. And it's not even, you can't even blame Lamar Jackson because the ball's tipped, but another pick six, a turnover in the fourth quarter that he's become known for in his career, which is weird because he's such a skilled player. He does so many things that are so hard to replicate and he's so special. But then you have these back-breaking plays, just like what we talked about with Josh Allen, and not to that extent, but a guy that is so gifted that any team in the league would love to have as their quarterback has this fatal flaw.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, like we see with Zach Wilson, he doesn't want to throw the ball, so he's not turning it over in interceptions. And then he got comfortable against the Raiders, and boom, what happened? Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't want to take away the aggressive nature of the player, but you also want him to be careful with the football. I mean, Josh Allen's interception at the end of the half was horrendous. It wasn't there. There was no way the ball could have gotten in there. And they can blame Dorsey, you know, and that's fine. Is it going to change? Are they going to do anything differently? I don't know. I mean, here's the thing about Joe Brady. Joe Brady, when he was in Carolina, he got fired midseason, right? Why? Mm. Because he was trying to run mostly the Saints offense. He was, you know, get the ball to the back. When you're running the Saints offense, you're running, you want to run the ball quite a bit. You want to get in some, you know, two backs, under center, play action, West Coast, all that. Be interested to see what Joe does. Is he going to run the LSU offense? Because they couldn't do that at Carolina.
Yeah, my first thought when they said that Joe Brady was stepping in the interim was like, okay, yeah, that's the understandable choice. But do you think that that's really going to make things much better? I feel like, and you would know better than I, Michael, but Josh Allen, it just seems like he and Brian Daboll had a really, really good, unique connection, and that relationship worked. And Ken Dorsey didn't necessarily have it, and it's been different since Daboll left.
Well, it is. It has been. But the offense, you know, for all that conversation has kind of been the same. It's just that the defense, Stormy, doesn't allow them to – I mean, the defense isn't as good. And so when Daboll was there, they were the number one defense in points allowed and yards allowed. And you couldn't throw the ball on them. They were the number one defense in yards per attempt. And you could barely run the football on them. I mean, teams tried. They were 16th in the rushing attempts. They only 11th in yards per attempt. They were a completely different team that was able to play from in front. And that really benefited the Bills offense. Remember, the last time they've played a base defense, you have to go back to when they played New England on December the 6th in that win game. That's the last time they played base. Ever since then, they've just always get a nickel. And, you know, and they get the lead and people can't run the ball on them.
RIP your betting accounts if you've been backing the Bills against the spread the last 6 weeks, because they are 0-for in that time. And now they're laying 6.5, 7 against the Jets this week. And Michael, let's rapid fire go through a number of these games that already early in the week for week 11 have pretty lopsided spreads. The Buffalo Bills being one of them. 89% of the handle, 76% of bets laying it with Buffalo in this spot.
You know, I think if the Jets, now I know Wilson's playing well. I'm relieved to know that Robert told me that. It makes me feel so much better. I didn't see it, but I'm glad he has. Look, if the Jets come out and try to run the ball and be physical and pressure Allen, he'll turn the ball over. This will be an under touchdown game. But remember, 45 of his 60 wins, Allen has covered the number. He's covered the number of 7. So if this is under 6.5 and you feel good about Allen, just remember that number. But look, Buffalo's got revenge on their mind. They can't allow Breece Hall to break a long run like he did in week 1.
Yeah, Michael, it's official. Robert Saleh is just gaslighting us all. How about the Dallas Cowboys? They're laying a big double-digit number against the Carolina Panthers. 91% of handle, 90% of bets laying 10.5.
Well, I mean, look, Frank Wright's now coming back to take the play calling back over from Thomas Brown. Did you notice any change in the play calling when T. Brown was doing it?
Michael, I was going to say, if anything, it got worse. If anything, it got worse. I was so excited, but it did nothing.
It did nothing. It looked nothing like it. And so, look, how does Carolina score? The only thing you got to be careful about in this game is we know Dallas plays on Turkey Day. And will they call off the dogs in the fourth quarter to rest up their guys? You know, and let the back door kind of open up for you where they don't, you know, they're up by 14, 17, and all of a sudden they don't care and they score a touchdown, go for 2, and they win by 9.
And the one thing
I mean, that would worry me. That I'm worried about that.
The back door, and I will give Carolina credit. One thing that they have been good at, like, despite having a total no-name defense outside of Brian Burns, and he's been dealing with injuries, like, they've actually played hard on defense. So that's another angle there, too. Another big number, people laying it with the Dolphins against the Raiders, a 12-point favorite hosting Las Vegas.
Yeah, I would play. I think this, if you like Miami here, you better get it. I think by the time you and I are doing the show Sunday morning, this could be at 14.
Really?
This could be at 14. Yeah, I think so, because I don't see how the Raiders match up to it. I know the Raiders want to sit there and let you murk the ball down the field, but I think that's going to be even harder. And here's where I really, really like the Dolphins in this game. People are underestimating how good the Dolphins' defense is right now. They're really good. They're back. Their front's good. They got, you know, Jalen Ramsey back. They got Howard healthy. I think Las Vegas with Aiden O'Connell's going to have a hard time blocking this front. And especially if Vic plays his standard cover 2, it'll be hard to run the football on him. I think this is going to be a 31-10 game if it is.
That's really, really interesting, especially because like there's a lot of hype around this Raiders team right now. When you first look at this spread, you're like, man, I thought that they were improving. But no, you're right. This is going to be a tough game for them against a Miami Dolphins team that the anticipation is that that number is just going to continue to go up, up and away. Again, 76% of the bets, 87% of the money right now laying 12 points with the Miami Dolphins against the Vegas Raiders. Michael, great show again. We got on track. Hour two was rocking and rolling. This was a lot of fun, and I'm excited for tomorrow because we have a lot of stuff to get into, but we're going to really dive into the Super Bowl rematch of Eagles Chiefs.
You bet. Can't wait, Stormy, and we'll get off to a good start. We'll birdie the first hole. That's going to be critical.
Of course we are. Let's just make like I wish I was better at golf. Hopefully I'll be better at TV tomorrow than I am at golf. We'll be back with more on VSiN next, but it'll be the Sharp Money crew. And for those of you that are watching on DraftKings Network, stay tuned for Pablo Torre. That's a wrap.